Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Garden, garden. We'll take one garden at a time.
Yeah.
Right, Julie Weisenhorn?
Yeah, there's a lot of gardens out there.
That's true. So. All right. Good morning. Welcome to our Smart Garden
Smart Show.
And welcome to Julie Weisenhorn, who's from the University of Minnesota, among other things.
Yeah. Good morning.
Did you grow up in Rochester?
I grew up in Rochester. I'm a Minnesotan.
You are.
Born and bred.
All right. You and I were talking. By the way, if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, call it in or text it in. Same number applies, 651-989-9226. And you know, we tend to get busy here.
We do.
We do.
And it's the new year, and people are kind of past the holidays now. And
yeah.
Not thinking about that as much. I think they're looking forward to 2020. Yay, the year of clarity, I like to say.
Well, it's January already.
Do you get
these catalogs, seed catalogs and stuff?
I do get them. I just got two yesterday.
You did?
Some of them recycle. Some of them I look at, like to look at the pictures.
Yeah, we're gearing up. I mean, it's not too early to think about your yard and garden.
No, it's always, I think actually for Minnesotans, with the exception of a couple of, time periods such as over the holidays, you're always thinking about, you know, what you're going to be doing in your landscape the next season. And even in the winter, and that's one of the things when you're looking at plants this spring, is to look for plants that have year-round interest, because we have a lot of kind of a bleak landscape.
Yeah.
And if you can add evergreens, or you can add trees with interesting form, or look for plants that have interesting bark, those are all really great features of plants that provide more than just your summer foliage and flowers. You get that winter interest as well.
You know, I once in a while talk about our Meyer lemon tree at home. Okay. And it's, I don't get into an argument, but I thought you guys have said that it likes moisture.
Yep. It's a tree, yeah.
And how often would you fertilize it this, you know, now that it's inside?
Sure. Well, if it's actively growing, that's one of the keys about indoor plants, is if they're not doing anything, they're kind of in a dormant state and just kind of hanging out there. But if you see active growth, flowering, fruiting, new leaves, then you would want to be fertilizing. And we always recommend about half strength, because those containers will hold those fertilizer salts, and that's when you get that white crusty stuff on
the
top.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's not draining out through the soil like it would in the backyard or in your garden bed. So you want to use a diluted form of that fertilizer.
And how often?
Well, I would do it probably every time that you're watering it.
Oh, that often?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Some great fruit on this one.
Really?
Oh, boy. Big time.
So I tell you about my Meyer lemon tree.
Do.
Okay. So I've talked about my Meyer lemon tree many times. How many years have we been doing the show? And I think I've had that tree for 5 years or so. And I have an article in Yard and Garden coming out, our Yard and Garden News coming out on mid-January. But I threw out my lemon tree.
You did?
I did. and... Even extension educators who work in horticulture have to give up the ghost at some point. And I've had scale on that plant for a number of years, and I've hand-picked it off. I tried spraying with some of the low-impact pesticides like insecticidal soap, neem oil, horticultural oil. I literally last year painted the entire tree and all surfaces with neem oil to try to suffocate the scale. Scale's very hard to see. So this year, I've got scale again.
Uh-oh.
And my tree is full of leaves, so there's a lot of scale. And it did bloom beautifully, but it was not holding on to any fruit. The scale was getting onto the fruit. It was on the flowers. It was really a nightmare. And so I pushed it out onto our deck on one of these warm days, and I sprayed it with neem oil, doused it. And a few hours later, I went out to look, and now the spray had caused fine webbing to appear, and fine webbing is indicative of spider mites.
Oh yes.
So scale is pretty immobile. It doesn't jump from plant to plant. And this tree in my house sat by itself, but spider mites are a whole nother story. And this tree is in a room with my orchids and a few other houseplants. And I just couldn't take it anymore. So
out it goes.
Carl helped me pull it out of the pot, went over the side into the compost pile.
Wow.
Yeah. So I am Meyer lemon tree less.
Well, get another one.
Well, I know, but now I'm kind of enjoying the real estate in my room. It's a little less crowded.
651-989-9226 is the number for the phone call if you want to talk to Julie or send her a text. Same number, 651-989-9226. Back to the phones we go. Jim is calling, I believe, from Minneapolis. Jim, you're on with Julie.
Hey, Julie, thank you very much for taking my call. God bless you and happy holidays.
Thank you, Jim.
I got a question for you. You're welcome. Well, certainly welcome. Happy holidays again. And, you know, I have a question. My question is, how do you preserve your roses and your daisies and your beautiful your carnations at this time of the year, your flowers, without digging them up? And what's a good compost to use for them? Dead fish?
Well, let's see. So these are plants you're growing in your yard. Is that right? So these are plants that are in your yard?
Yeah.
So you would want to, they would hopefully be, first of all, winter hardy. So there are roses that are not very hardy here, but we have lots of great shrub roses that are terrifically winter hardy. And as far as the perennials go, like daisies and the carnations, the dianthus, you would want to just mulch those with some crushed up leaves or shredded leaves. That's a great compost. And just kind of pile them around the plant. And then in the spring, as you see the plant start to turn green or start to emerge, you can push those leaves aside and just leave it on the soil as mulch. And that will help to hold in moisture. It also adds some carbon to the soil, which is important in our soils. And you want to just fertilize those. You can fertilize them with an all-purpose, a rose fertilizer or a perennial fertilizer. So in most cases, that compost will really help to add nutrients to the soil.
Very good, Jim. Thank you.
Yep.
Jim leaves that line open at 651-989-9226. Send a text if that's easy. We have some of those, too. Here's one. My branches are bending with old apples in my orchard. Should I remove them this weekend or let them fall off naturally?
I think if they're going to break the branch, then I would go out and maybe just snap those off. In most cases, they're going to fall off eventually, or an animal is going to come and eat them if you have deer or something, which they'd eat the tree as well. But you can certainly go and just pick those off.
No problem.
No, it shouldn't be a problem.
All right. Now, I don't know if we did this, if Mary hasn't been here for a while, so maybe it was Teresa. What was the names, texter says, of the catalogs you talked about with vegetables from years ago?
The heirloom vegetables.
Heirloom vegetables.
Yeah, so they can be found in lots of different catalogs. They'll be in the description of the seed or the plants that you can buy. And some of them are things like Seed Savers. Seed Savers is a good catalog. They focus on protecting heirloom plants and propagating them and collecting the seed and making it available. They're out of Decorah, Iowa, so they're kind of in our region. But if you just look in the description of the plants, you'll see in a lot of these catalogs, there's a lot of these heirloom plants that you can buy the seeds.
Okay, good. You mentioned the phrase spider mites, and we're getting texts about that particular critter. Here's one. It says, I have a bonsai with spider mites. What should I do?
Yeah, so you need to, if you've identified it correctly as spider mites, I'm sorry for that. You would want to use a miticide. So spider mites are not our insects. They are mites. It's different. They have 8 legs, but they are not spiders. And if Jeff Hahn was here, he could get more into the nitty-gritty about what family they belong to. But they're mites. So you need a miticide. You need something that specifically is going to attack spider mites. And so you would want to look at that label. And like with any pesticide, you would want to read the label. Now, one thing about spider mites is that they like hot, dry conditions. So our houses are quite warm right now. They're quite dry. And so it kind of creates a perfect environment for them to grow. The plant is small enough and you feel comfortable doing this, you could put it into the sink or the shower and you could wash it off, and that might get rid of some of the mites. But It depends on how badly infested they are.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's really bad, then you're going to need to reach for a bottle, unfortunately.
All right. I tell you what, Julie, we need to take a break. A quick one. Inviting our listeners to join in. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, call Julie or send a text, 651-989-9226. That number applies to both the phone calls and the text messages. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We sure have fun here, though, don't we?
Yeah,
we do. At no one's expense, by the way. But if you have a lawn or garden question, this is called the Smart Garden Show.
Yeah.
Here on CCO. And we invite your calls or texts as usual. Julie Weisenhorn, if you're just joining us from the University of Minnesota. Down the road, let's talk about the Arboretum.
Yeah,
that's a fantastic place.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Lynn is calling from Rice Lake, I do believe. Lynn, you're on with Julie.
Julie, this spring and summer, we had a lab mix living at our house, a puppy.
Oh, nice.
And he decided that it would be nice to go and destroy my garden, literally pull up all the plants, but no bulbs came up, no roots came up. Is there stuff still down there?
I do not know that. I think you're just going to have to wait till spring, but boy, I wish I had a lab puppy mix in my yard. So. But, you're going to just have to wait, I guess, and find out and see what happens. Now, bear in mind, too, that if you planted tulip bulbs, squirrels really like those, too. So you may not blame the dog if you've lost some of your tulips. But, that's tough with dogs. We get that question periodically about what do I do? My dog is killing my lawn. My dog is digging up my plants. My dog likes to eat my plants. And it is a matter of combination of training. And it's also protection, like physical protection, fencing, until that dog is old enough that they stop chewing on things or stop digging. It's hard to do because, you know, as we know as dog owners, that's what dogs do. They dig and they, you know, love to run through the yard and stuff. But maybe there's a way you can put all of your most important plants in one area and kind of leave a more of a play area for the dog.
There you go. It's an idea. Good luck, Lynn, with that. 651-989-9226. The same number applies to the text. I bought, text just says, some succulents at a big box store in November, and there have been spider webs between the pot and the wall ever since. Do I have spider mites, do you think?
Between the pot and the wall?
I think you have spiders.
I think you just have house spiders. The spider webs that, the webbing that the spider mites form is super fine. You can't see it. Unless you barely see it, I should say. I always notice it if I happen to spray even just water on a plant. You might want to try that and just see if the webbing is actually in the plants itself. And it's very, very fine. It looks a little bit different than the spider webs that we see, you know, just because we haven't been, dusting corners or something. And then if you have them on that succulent, I would first of all move them away from other plants. That's the most important thing. And then you might want to take them out of that, out of their containers and put them in the sink and give them a good shower because they're likely probably pretty small. And see if that helps. And really pick through them, clean them off, wipe them off with a towel. See if you can do something. And then keep checking them. That's important with houseplants. You got to keep up on checking them. If you've had spider mites or mealy bugs or scale, you got to keep looking at the plants. Checking under the leaves and trying to eradicate those pests as much as you can. Sometimes, like me, the plant has to go out because you don't want to sacrifice your other plants too.
Tell me about, you said the scale on that Meyer Lemon tree that you had to throw out. What? It's not a critter, is it?
It is a critter. And scale is particularly difficult to control because it's a sucking insect. It produces honeydew. So if you remember from previous shows, honeydew is a clear. Actually, the sugars that the insect excretes. So they've sucked up the juices from the plants, and this is what comes out the other end. And it's clear and it's sticky. It's very hard. I call it honey glue because it's really, really hard to get off of pots and furniture and carpets and rugs and the plants themselves. But you'll see that, and that's a sign of that insect. And the symptoms are that the leaves become kind of spotty looking. They might have some damage. And then the scale itself is very, very small, and it looks like a lenticel. A lenticel is a part of the stem that we see. It's a typical plant characteristic, but they're oftentimes confused with lenticels, these little specks that are sometimes on the stem of the plant.
Okay.
And so you look at the leaves, you look underside of the leaves, and you see these, in my case, they were a little tan, oval-shaped spot on the leaf. And when you could scrape it off with your thumbnail, and it's a little covering over the insect that protects it. So it's really hard. You can't, when you spray it, you got to really know what you're, you know, you got to get at those insects because you need to have that spray kind of slide, like the insecticidal soap slide underneath that covering. It's very difficult to get rid of them.
Boy, sounds like it.
Yeah, really hard. And they multiply rapidly. And the young, the immature scale, are tiny, tiny specks. You can hardly see them. The adults are bigger. But there are some good pictures in that Yard and Garden news article that's coming out on the 15th of January. So you can find the link to that on our website, extension.umn.edu and Yard and Garden. And it's Yard and Garden news. You can subscribe to it. Click on the subscribe button and you can get those bi-monthly alerts. So twice a month you'll get an email that says, you know, the Yard and Garden news is up, and here's what's in it, and you'll see that article. It's called Saying Goodbye to a Plant.
It's always, as I say, a great resource to check out the website, and especially this time of year when it's dead of winter.
Right.
And make some plans, but you guys have so much information on there.
Good information. And my colleagues, Natalie Hoidl and Annie Claude, have written. They also have a blog as well called The Fruit. It's the Fruit and Veg News. And so if you're a vegetable grower or fruit grower outside, that would be a great thing to read. I always learn stuff. And then they also have a podcast. And we have podcasts of the show on that webpage as well. So their podcast is called What's Killing My Kale. I love it. And then we also have our podcast linked there, too. So if you miss the show or want to go back and listen, you can go back and just go to our website and click on that. It'll take you right to it.
Good deal. And if you want to call in this morning or text in, same number, 651-989-9226. Let's go back to the phones, Julie. Dennis is calling from Vadnais Heights, I think. Hi, Dennis. What's your question?
Good morning. I've got an ash tree that I just had a fairly large branch cut off. It wasn't unhealthy. It was just, I don't know. It didn't look right.
Just in the way.
Yeah, it was kind of in the way.
Okay.
And it's probably about, 12, 14 inch diameter right at the tree.
Wow.
And it was pretty good size. And I talked to the guy, and he said that I shouldn't do anything with the spot where it was cut. Did he give me good information?
He certainly did. And it sounds to me like you had a professional arborist come in, which is the best way to handle mature trees, especially major pruning like that. And he is correct.
Yeah, I was just concerned about the ash borer, and this is a very healthy tree. I've not had a problem with it, and I don't know if that open spot on the trunk is going to attract ash borers in the spring. Or
no, it's not, actually. It is. They are not attracted by that. It's not like oak wilt or pruning apple trees in the summer where we open up a wound and there's all sorts of critters and diseases that get in there. The important thing when you do prune a tree like that and you leave that, the research has shown that we shouldn't paint the tree with, used to recommend latex paint or a wound sealer because the tree will actually heal faster if it's just left to its own devices. So it creates kind of a donut, a callus around the edge of that, and then we'll close that up or kind of grow around it, and that protects it. And if you paint it, that tends to slow that down or really deter it. So you did the right thing. You had some professional come in, leave it open. It will heal itself and shouldn't be a problem with the EAB.
All right. Thanks, Dennis. Dennis leaves that line open, 651-989-9226. Here's a text, Julie. Says, our favorite nursery, two nurseries, in fact, closed for good. We've been going to both for decades.
That's sad.
Ordering plants, spring annuals, online the way to go? I typically buy 2.5 to 4 inch annuals for my gardens.
Well, it's certainly an option to order online. I am a fan of, texter has indicated, of utilizing and visiting our local nurseries. And I, you know, it does a couple things. One is you know where the plants come from. you have somebody who's standing behind those plants and saying, we, you know, endorse these plants. You have somebody you can talk to when you're looking for plants. And you could say, what's the, I'm looking for an annual that is, you know, purple and it's this tall and it needs to grow in part shade. Can you help me out? And they can help you out with that. So great knowledge resources. Plus, you're also supporting the Minnesota economy and people whose lives depend on, selling these plants and taking care of Minnesota gardeners. So I think that it's better if you go look for a new nursery and you get to look and feel the plants, too. Now, online is sometimes the way to go with more exotic plants. If you're ordering tropicals, you're probably not going to find as big a selection maybe in a Minnesota nursery, but they still have great tropicals, cannas and, indoor plants. And so I would kind of encourage you to find a new nursery or a couple new nurseries in your area that you really like and build a relationship with the people who work there. They are there. They want gardeners in Minnesota to have healthy gardens and choose the right plants, and you help support the economy.
Absolutely. I know we have to take a break shortly. I want to alert our callers, Bill, Rita, Ken, hang on the line. We're going to be next up. And if you'd rather send Julie your text gardening type of question, we haven't had any lawn questions today. I'm not sure if that's because of the...
Because we can't see them.
No. 651-989-9226. That's the number. Maybe you can help me with this. Cheryl from Hutch just sent a text. I was just wondering if you have any information about our experience, you think about this as we take a break.
Okay.
Regarding sub-zero hybrid tea roses bred by Dr. Brownell, are you aware of that stuff?
Boy, that's probably over my head.
All right, we'll.
But I'll think about it.
We'll research this during the break. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO, and we're back. I was going to grab a cup of coffee, but I guess we don't have time. We have callers, as you can see, Julie. We have texters as well. Let's get to them. Let's see who's been
all
waiting.
Right,
it would
good.
Be Rita calling from New Prague. Rita, you're on with Julie.
Hey, so a question about watering indoor plants. I feel like my tap water is a little bit harsh and always leaves that kind of white crusty on the top of the soil.
Okay.
So I'm just wondering what I can do change that, or is it good for the plant? Does it not matter?
That's a great question. And watering, ironically, is one of the main ways we kill our house plants. It's almost like we watered them too much. And I think that's because people have a tendency to water on a schedule, and your plants don't always need that. And every house plant is a little bit different. So one of the ways that you can alleviate any issues with water, and tap water can be difficult for plants. It has fluoride, it has chlorine. It has other additives to it sometimes. And so I would recommend when you go to the grocery store is to get some reverse osmosis water. It's the drinking water where you bring a gallon jug and you fill it up and you take it home and you bring it back. I did that for a long time for my orchids because they are sensitive to the fluoride and some of the additives in water and tap water. So that is one way you can solve it. You can also buy spring water, distilled water. The important thing to realize about that kind of water is that there's literally nothing in it. There's no minerals. There's nothing. So you'll want to add a little bit of an all-purpose fertilizer or a specialty fertilizer if you're growing orchids or African violets or something like that. So that would be the recommendation, is to use some of that water. You can also collect snow. I don't know if we have enough snow for that. And, of course, it melts down quite a bit. People also will collect rainwater and keep it for the winter. I have that, and I have a heated garage, so I have some rain barrels in my garage that we moved in there. And I use that water to water my plants. So that's quite a bit of an undertaking. But if you just go to the grocery store and get some of the spring water, distilled water, or reverse osmosis water, you can go with that, and it works great.
Good. All right. 651-989-9226 is the phone number. It's also the text number. And we have a bunch of both. Let's see who's been waiting. Ken. Ken's been waiting there in West St. Paul with a question. Ken, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
This question is specifically about the pruning paint that you had in the other conversation.
Sure.
Prior to mine. I've always used pine tar, and with no ill effects in my experience. And I understand they tell me not to, but I picked up some plants from a large established nursery, and their pruning scars showed use of a similar product, pine tar. And I asked them why, and they all kind of smiled and didn't really have an answer. I was curious as to the use of pine tar specifically, and as opposed to other pruning paints like latex and other things.
Right.
And why they would. It's kind of like your mother telling you, do as I say, not as I do. So I'll hang up and listen on the radio if that's all right.
All right, thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Okay, that's a great question, Ken. I don't know about the differences with pine. I think pine tar is just another type of a wound protecting. When if you talk to tree folks, they will also tell you that if you have to cut a tree during a sensitive time of the year, for example, during the spring from April through June is high-risk time for oak wilt. And oak wilt is vectored through insects and also through root grafting. And if an oak with oak wilt has branches that are rubbing onto the branches of another oak, or those roots are crossing underground, or if the beetles are carrying them between this particular beetle's carrying them between the trees, the trees can contract oak wilt, which will totally kill the tree. So, but let's say you have a storm in the spring, a tree branch breaks off on your oak, and you know it's a high risk time. That would be the time that you would have to make that cut to remove that broken branch, and you would then paint that wound at that time. And the reason for that is because of this high-risk vector, this high-risk time for oak wilt to be vectored. That's an example of when you would use a paint or a pine tar or something on that wound. But other times of the year when it's not high-risk time, say like right now, and you did some cutting out there, the research has shown that not painting the wound will help that tree will recover just fine. And actually recovers better without being painted. So I'm just going with what the tree folks have told us, our researchers in urban forestry, and so I don't know why the nursery did that. Maybe they were just being overly cautious. But the research has shown that the tree will heal just fine without the tar now, except for those high risk times.
Okay, very good. 651-989-9226, same number for the text screen if you want to send Julie a text. Bill is calling from Minneapolis, I believe. Bill, you're on WCCO. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I've had a peace lily in my family for a long time, and I live in an apartment that just has egress windows. And so I was just curious the question about growing lights.
Okay.
When I would know that maybe it's a good time to get them if I need it. And also, is there a store in town, or how would I go about finding one, and any particulars on that? I'll just hang up and listen to the answer off the phone.
Okay,
thank you.
Great. There are more options for grow lights than ever. In the past, there was the specialty grow lights, the kind of purpley bulbs that you could buy. Very expensive. And research showed that really just your ordinary fluorescent bulbs were just as good. So you can use just a shop light fixture. And then now we have LED bulbs, which of course are energy efficient. They last long. And you can buy them in different sizes and forms so that they fit into different kinds of light fixtures. You can fit them right into a floor lamp, for example, and put it over the, over the plant. You can also buy a lot of different things now for lighting. And how would you know that a plant needs lights? Well, all plants, with the exception of some that are really low light plants and do fine in kind of dark corners, will require some light. And you'll see them just start to slowly, they don't look as, their leaves are dull. Their leaves are turning kind of pale. they're just not very robust looking, and they'll start to, basically you're taking away the light source that creates the opportunity. It's one of the ingredients for photosynthesis, which manufactures food for the plant, by the plant. So you could buy a floor lamp fixture, and you could buy a like a LED bulb, and you can find those online. You can find them at garden centers. I've bought them in both places before. And you would want to put that light on a timer and simulate daylight. So you'd want to simulate like 16 hours of daylight. Now, the one thing about peace lilies is that in their native environment, which is the tropics like Hawaii, they actually are understory plants. So they do fairly well in a lower light. So they maybe would not need that much light. You could add just a turn it on for maybe 8 hours. And not put it too close to the light. It could be a broader light, and that would probably help a little bit. So I hope that's a good description. We do have a publication about houseplants and lighting, indoor lighting, on our yard and garden website. So you can look under extension.umn.edu, go to yard and garden, and then go to houseplants, and there's a lighting publication there.
All right, good. Very good. Let's go back to the phones. Tim, I believe, calling in from Mendota Heights. Tim, you're on WCCO.
Good morning.
Morning.
Say, I recently saw an article about how we might be able to grow Zone 5 trees in our changing climate here.
Okay.
But the thought occurred to me, why would a Zone 5 tree do any better in terms of when it's 30 degrees one day and 10 below the next? I would think they would suffer just as much as a Zone 4 tree.
Well, that's a good question. So, what we're finding, if you look in the nursery trade, we still recommend zone 4 plants for what's classified as zone 4. So our zones are classified by data from over 30 years that the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, has collected. And in 2012, they released their the zone map that we use now for qualifying what plants, you know, what's our cold hardiness zone. So I'm sitting in downtown Minneapolis. Our cold hardiness zone here, by rule of thumb, is a zone 4. And that is the plant that has shown over evaluation over many years to be able to survive to, I think, the low temperature of like minus 35 degrees. So so that is considered a zone 4 plant. Zone 5 plants, what we found is that sometimes they will survive in microclimates in within zone 4. So you may live in an urban environment where you have a protected backyard and you've tried a zone 5 plant and boy, it really does well. It may not live as long as it would in a true zone 5, but it seems to perform well. Some plants, the plant itself grows, but they put out buds. They flower very early in the spring, and we oftentimes get hit with late frost. So those flower buds are killed off. Examples are things like peaches and apricots. Some of these plants that in some cases, there's somebody who says, I've had a peach tree for 25 years and it produces every year just great. Well, that's just a very unique anecdotal case. Overall, from looking at research on these plants and evaluations, a lot of times those plants, you might get a good crop one year, but the next year you get hit with a frost, a late frost, which is pretty typical in Minnesota. So if you try a zone 5 plant, you are taking a chance that it's not going to be very long lived. It might work for a little while in your yard and perform fine, but ultimately we still go back to those 30 years of data from the USDA that the USDA has collected and still recommend a zone 4 plant. So when you go to a garden center and you're looking for a plant, you need to know what zone you are growing in and then find a plant for longevity's sake, find a plant that's going to that's suited to that zone. That is can survive that zone.
All right.
Did I get everything there? Did that make sense?
Yeah. Although I've done that too. I've tried mm-hmm. it. Of course, last year is not a great year for boxwoods.
Right.
But one out of maybe a dozen boxwoods I had, yeah. I bought a zone 5. And that didn't do any better. Or it didn't do any worse than the four because of last winter.
Right. And that's the other thing, too. We're because of climate change, we are having these huge swings, variability in our moisture, in our temperatures. And it's very hard to say, you know, for sure that even a zone four plant is not going to have winter damage on it, like you said, those boxwoods.
That's right. All right, quick break is in order. We'll come right back on our Smart Garden Show. If you have a question for Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, call now or text now, 651-989-9226. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We are around here on WCCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, always welcoming your phone calls and text messages. We're being aided again by Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. And before we go back to the phones or text messages, I want to talk about, I was mentioning off air that I had seen an ad in a magazine about the Arboretum.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that the month of January, there's free admission.
Yes, there is. I just found that out myself. So that is true. There is free admission to the Arboretum the month of January. It's a great time to go out there. Everyone thinks, oh, but the gardens, what's going on in the gardens? The landscape is beautiful in the winter, beautiful. And going back to the very start of the show when I talked about winter interest, this is an awesome opportunity to go out and look at plants in their winter form and maybe think about, hey, that would look great in my yard. Or boy, I really like the form of that evergreen. This is a great chance to go out and see what those plants look like in a winter landscape. And you might have some ideas for things that would work in your yard, too. They also have snowshoeing.
If you want activities,
ski, you can just hike. And, oh, my gosh, the Great Hall is gorgeous. They do such a decorating. They really went over the top this year. It was absolutely breathless.
And somebody is saying now, they're talking about this Arboretum. Where the heck is it?
It is west of the metro on Highway 5, and at the just past the intersection of 5 and 41.
You'll see it off to your left as you're heading west.
And this is, by the way, the last weekend of the Winter Lights exhibit. They have fantastic lights that are designed specially to show to be University of Minnesota releases, plant releases. So there's an azalea light and a Honeycrisp light, and they're fantastic. And actually, we're going to be going out there tonight to take a look at those. Yeah, we didn't get a chance on New Year's Eve.
You were busy.
Because we were busy playing. But that's this is the last weekend for that. It's over tomorrow, Sunday, at 9 o'clock. And so get out there now, and it's free admission.
Pretty good.
Pretty awesome.
Pretty good. Back to the phones we go, Julie. Kelly is calling from Andover, I believe. Kelly, you're on WCCO.
Hi, good morning. I have a rhubarb-related question.
Okay.
We have a nice growth of rhubarb at home, and my family enjoys it during the summer. As we are moving towards spending some time down in Florida over the winter, is rhubarb able to be transplanted and grown at all in the Florida environment?
That is an excellent question. My initial thought is no, just because it is the plants that you've been growing here have been grown in Minnesota, so they become acclimated to our Minnesota temperatures. I imagine you would see more issues with maybe leaf diseases because of the humidity. But that being said, I have never tried that. And that would be something that maybe you could look at the University of Florida at their extension site and see if they list rhubarb as something that you can grow. I would probably, if you're renting a place or if you're, you know, if you have a timeshare there or if you own a condo down there or own a house, I would probably buy rhubarb down there and plant it there versus bringing it from here. I don't think it would be very successful coming from Minnesota to grow in Florida. But, you know, everything's an experiment sometimes with gardening, but you might want to just pick up a plant down there. Plus, the other thing about that, thinking about pests and diseases, if you are carrying plants from one state to another, you may be transferring diseases or pests from one state to another. So it's best to purchase the plants locally and grow them locally and not carry them back and forth across state lines. That's how a lot of our pests get moved around pretty quickly by us humans.
Probably one of the good reasons you can't fly with
that's
that
right.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to go back and say buy the plant in Florida, grow it in
that
Florida,
makes sense.
Leave it in Florida.
Sounds good. Thank you, Kelly. 651-989-9226. Texter says, I have a very old Christmas cactus and very big. Can it be cut back and does it like to be root bound?
They actually like to be well drained. Root bound, maybe a little bit. They don't like to be transplanted very often. So I would say yes, they do quite well for a long time in the same container. You can take cuttings of that plant. The sections of what we call the leaves of the plant are actually called cladophylls. And you can snip those off or snap them off, dip them in a little water, and then in a little rooting hormone. You can buy that at your garden center, and then put them into another pot, and they should root off of that. That hormone prompts root formation. If you have a very old plant, I would suggest you do that because a lot of times those plants have been passed on through the family. And boy, your name is mud if you kill your great grandmother's Christmas cactus. So it's a nice way to share the plant with other members of your family as well and say, yeah, this is great grandma Ida's Christmas cactus and now it's yours. So you could do that too. It's very hard to repot very large plants. You're going to need another person to help you out with that so that there's minimal breakage.
All right. Let's grab some more text messages. I don't know if you can feel this or not. When I water my plants, I smell a musty smell.
Oh.
What should I do?
So that musty smell could very well be the soil is overly wet and that it's maybe degraded. And you might want to be repotting those plants if you have that smell.
Is that tough to do?
Depends on the size of the plant.
Yeah, certainly.
You know, if it's a small plant like a, you know, African violet, it's not too hard to do. But if it's a big plant like a lemon tree, oof-da.
That would be, yeah. A couple of folks helping.
Yeah, but I would repot that then and put some fresh soil in and use garden soil, use indoor soil that you have purchased that's sterile. Don't go out to your garage or especially if you've kept it outside because it can oftentimes have insects in it.
Mm.
Try to use fresh soil for indoor plants just because you're not bringing in any pests then.
Makes sense, too.
Yeah. Save that other stuff for your pots outside.
Julia Texters says, how often should I water inside geraniums I have wintered in my bedroom?
Oh, that's a great thing to do in the winter. They grow very nicely indoors as houseplants. You would want to feel the soil. And when the soil probably top few inches are dry, then you would want to water those. Make sure they drain well. That's true of all houseplants. You can set them in the sink and water them. Geraniums are very forgiving as houseplants. They do well. They are fine being watered with tap water. And you can kind of keep cutting them back and you can root those other sections. Again, dip the end in water, dip the end in rooting hormone, put it in a new a fresh pot. So just feel the soil.
Okay.
And water as needed.
Another text, Julie, says this. One of my friends had this severe winter burn. We were talking about boxwoods.
Sure.
Last winter. So at the end of this past summer, they cut all the boxwoods down to the ground. Will they come back?
Ooh.
Mine didn't.
I don't think so. It's going to depend if there are still viable buds on those, the part of the plant they left. So they might be replacing those boxwoods.
Yeah.
Time will tell.
Yep. Wait till spring. Patience.
Wait till spring.
Yeah.
It's going to take a long time for them to get to a decent size.
Oh, I should say. Yeah.
They're very slow growers.
Big time slow.
Yeah.
I've heard, Texter says, rhubarb will not grow in a climate where it does not have hard freezes.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. Our listeners are smart.
Oh, we have.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure they
are. Yeah, probably not. But again, if you winter someplace, buy your plants in that location. Buy them locally and grow them locally. Mm-hmm. Don't carry them back and forth between the location.
Okay.
Transfer disease and insects.
Another text, Julie says, good morning, Denny and Julie. Just out of curiosity, where does zone 5 begin? Is the southern Iowa border the line between 4 and 5? The southern Iowa border. I wouldn't think the southern.
So, not the southern Iowa. Yeah, it's actually, we have a little bit of zone 5 along our border in some counties. I think Houston County, Fillmore County. But zones are not straight lines. You have to, the best thing to do is go on the USDA website and enter in your zip code, and it will tell you what zone you are in, because there are even pockets of zone 5 in Hennepin County. And again, it's based on records, on temperature records from over 30 years of information. So, so you need to put your zip code in. And we in Minnesota have zone 3, we have zone 4, we have a little tiny bit of zone 5. And that actually changed from the previous map. We had zone 2 that was up in the corner of the state up in Kitson County for many years. When they reissued the new map in 2012, we lost zone 2. We now have zone 3, 4, and a little bit of 5, which we did not have any 5 before. So it's not a straight line. You can't draw a line like a latitudinal line.
So what did you say to research? Go on what?
Go to the USDA website, usda.gov. Just you can Google cold hardiness map, and you have the opportunity to enter in your zip code, and that will tell you the zone you're growing in.
Okay. Julie, we have about a minute to go. Let's kind of backtrack a little bit and talk about the website and what we can find there.
Yes. So if you are looking for information, people have been asking about rhubarb, for example, on our extension.umn.edu website, we have an opportunity. You can go to Yard and Garden, and there you can subscribe to our Yard and Garden news blog, which comes out every 2 weeks. And we also have podcasts of this show. We have podcasts of What's Killing My Kale, which is our fruit and vegetable folks podcast that they've created. We have also the fruit and vegetable blog. And we have lots and lots of web pages, including diagnostic tools about what's wrong with my plant. Is this plant a weed? What insect is this? And then all sorts of web pages about houseplants and flowers and trees and shrubs and lawns, lawn care. And so it's a wealth of information.
And that website is?
extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden.
Great to see you, Julie.
Good to see you, too.
See you again down the road. We'll be back with more Lawn and Garden Talk next Saturday. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO, 8 in the morning. We hope you can join us then.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.